The fabric of Black history, preserved here in Central Florida. You're listening to The Wrap from Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne.
This February marks 100 years since historian Carter G. Woodson initiated Black History Month in 1926. It actually started as a week-long observance in February that coincided with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. And for centuries, Black families have incorporated quilting into the fabric of their history. What started as a means of survival during slavery evolved into an art form and tool to preserve a family's legacy. We'll learn the history behind quilt making as a means of storytelling in Black communities. That's ahead on The Wrap. The big stories this week from Central Florida Public Media. But first, these headlines. The Florida House approved a proposal to tighten voter eligibility rules. This came over the objections of Democrats who say seniors and students will be among those blocked from casting a ballot. The bill contains wide-ranging changes to the state election code, including new proof of citizenship requirements when registering to vote, reductions to the kind of photo identification cards that can be used at polling locations, and requiring an individual's legal citizenship status to be posted on driver's licenses and ID cards issued by the state. The bill's Republican sponsor said the proposal aligns with the will of Florida voters in 2020 that supported a citizens' initiative to require Florida statutes to declare only a citizen of the U.S. who is 18 years old or older can vote in Florida. But Democrats warn the changes will create additional hurdles for married women who have changed their last name and people born when records weren't as digitally maintained as today. Opponents are calling it a poll tax by paperwork. A Senate version awaits action on the floor. On Monday, Orange County commissioners will consider if they want to ask voters for a 1 cent infrastructure tax to fund improvements that could range from conservation to transportation and affordable housing. As Central Florida Public Media's Joe Burns reports, if they do want it on the November ballot, they'll set a public hearing for early April.
Orange County voters have a history of saying yes on conservation issues and a recent history of saying no to a transportation tax. So how will they vote on a sales tax that combines both and also incorporates other needs like affordable housing? At the county's request, a national nonprofit, the Trust for Public Land, has been looking into that and will report to the county commission on Monday. Commissioner Nicole Wilson has advocated for this approach. She says that briefing is step one.
Step number two, what direction is the board going to take with that information? And I think, you know, it can go any number of ways, including nowhere.
The sales tax would generate an estimated $529 million a year for Orange County and another $229 million for its cities. Joe Burns, Central Florida Public Media.
NASA moved its grounded Artemis moon rocket from the launch pad back to its hangar Wednesday for more repairs. The 32-foot SLS rocket had spent a month at the pad ready for potential liftoff, but encountered a series of problems serious enough to require a return to the Vehicle Assembly Building, which is about 4 miles away. Managers ordered the rollback over the weekend after the rocket's helium pressurization system malfunctioned. Already delayed a month by hydrogen fuel leaks, the launch team had been targeting March for astronauts' first trip to the moon in decades. But now the Artemis II lunar fly-around by a U.S.-Canadian crew is off until at least April. These stories and more on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. Have you ever thought about writing a play? Well, if so, the Storied Playwrights Roundtable offers a couple of judgment-free monthly workshops, in person and virtual, for you to try your hand. This week on Spotlight, how the Playwrights Roundtable is helping stories go from the page to the stage. Spotlight is a weekly peek at Central Florida's arts and culture scene. Get it wherever you get this podcast. Quilting has played a significant role in Black family life for centuries. During slavery, Black women were forced to make quilts from scraps to survive bitter cold weather conditions. Later, quilting transformed into a form of expression and art. Today, that history is unfolding inside artist Lisa Moore's studio at the Art and History Museums in Maitland. Central Florida Public Media's Sharon Stone visited that studio to learn more about how quilters are stitching together their history.
The fabric being cut here is just one piece of the stories Lisa is stitching together.
So I'm just sewing these scraps that I'm making from smaller pieces to make larger pieces. And then I'll just use these for any upcoming projects that I have. A quilt is basically anything that's made up of three layers, a top layer, which is the quilt top itself, a batting, and then a backing. So that's the basis of a quilt. And then whatever you put on top of it, it just adds to it. This all starts out as a sketch, and then I transfer it, then I pick out my colors, and then I create the actual quilt. Like that one started out as a sketch, and it's based on Zora Neale Hurston's time in Haiti. And so when she was in Haiti, she finished writing the book, Their Eyes Were Watching God.
The colors of the quilt pop off the white wall where it hangs toward the back of her studio space. The quilt's backdrop is a Haitian flag. The top is blue, that reminds you of the night sky. The bottom, a bold, vibrant red. Rays from a yellow sun are in the upper left corner. A black African raffia tribal mask is near the center, surrounded by flowing, straw-like grass.
I wanted it to show movement. And so that's why I have this grass here.
Eatonville writer Zora Neale Hurston traveled to Haiti to research and write about voodoo, immersing herself in ceremonies that celebrated the religion with song, dance, and other rituals.
If you look at it straight on, you can see a backbone, because typically during these ceremonies that there were two people in here. So this would be the head, and this backbone represents the backbones of the person that is behind the head, just sort of moving the back of the body. And then if you look in here, I hid little symbols. And because she finished writing Their Eyes Were Watching God, I inserted a little eye in there, and then if you move the grass, you'll see other little things within the grass that sort of relate to that culture of voodoo and hoodoo, the studies that she did.
There's so much hidden.
And that's the point, is that I want you to, the closer you get to it, to say, oh, I didn't see that eye. Now I see the eye. Now I see that little voodoo doll that's in there. If you move it some more, there's like another eye hidden in there. And then there's a silhouette of the continent of Africa. The closer you get, I want you to be able to see all of the detail.
Quilting began close to home for Lisa. She initially made baby quilts.
Whoever was expecting, I knew them, I would send them a quilt. And then my brother-in-law suddenly passed away. And so after the service, I asked my sister, I said, I want to make each of the kids a quilt made out of their dad's clothes, because I had read about memory quilts and that kind of thing. So I asked her for clothes. So my niece had given her dad a pink and white striped seersucker shirt, a polo shirt, for Father's Day. And so I used that shirt in her quilt, which had pink and different shades of teal and white in it, because of the shirt that my sister had given me. And then one of my nephews, he had a quilt made out of his father's pajamas. He slept in them every night. And then another son got a quilt made out of some of his dress shirts. And something about that experience of making those quilts for my nieces, it just changed something in me. And I felt their connection to those clothes that once belonged to their dad.
What began as her way of comforting grieving family also became a way to preserve their memories. The fabric holds history.
Quilting does equal history, and just from historical perspective, but also from a sense of necessity.
When you are creating a quilt, are you consciously preserving history, or is it something that's more organic?
So I do make a conscious effort to preserve history, because I'm a teacher by training. And so that's important to me, to document history. But I sort of like the visual nature, because sometimes we are more visual than we are for someone to sit down and read a book.
Your heritage traces back to St. Augustine.
Yes.
Do those roots show up in what you create?
I'm working on a series right now that is related to my grandmother's great-grandfather in St. Augustine. And so this quilt over here represents that because, you know, St. Augustine borders the St. John's River. And since the river was such a key part of their very existence up there, I wanted to have a map to just show that. So I'm going to embroider it and add more details to it. But yes, my family history dates back to 1743 with Antonio Proctor in St. Augustine. So this quilt will highlight him.
Lisa's quilts trace centuries of her own family history. The tradition itself dates back to a time when it wasn't art. It was about survival.
So there's a lot of history in the process of quilting when the enslaved did not have access to, you know, you couldn't go to a store and buy covering. And in the wintertime, you would need something to cover your bedding or whatever you slept on. So that was built out of that necessity of having to make your own bedding.
Practically, they provided warmth during slavery. How did it evolve into storytelling?
I think when the enslaved were making quilts, they were too involved with the day-to-day life to think this is going to be some long-standing art. They were using what they had. They used old clothes. They used whatever they could get their hands on. But I think as we have evolved and we were able to be more reflective and sort of look back, there have been a lot of quilts that have been made to do a snapshot of specific historical events. We progressed and we had more access to different supplies and that kind of thing. It had more free time. The craft evolved from a utilitarian to more of an artistic form where people use that to express themselves.
Do people understand how important this is to storytelling?
I think after I have a conversation with them, they do understand. Because like I said, all of my quilts, they are centered around a story. And for instance, this quilt that's hanging on the wall, it has African print fabrics, but it also has silhouettes, which I absolutely love silhouettes. So this quilt shows or demonstrates my family, the women in my family. So they're living. There are five generations that are still alive, from my 99-year-old grandmother all the way down to my 6-year-old granddaughter. So for all of that, there's a woman alive in each generation between my grandmother and my granddaughter. And so one day that just hit me. I was like, wow, that doesn't happen a lot. Once I realized that, I was like, I've got to make a quilt to symbolize that with five generations being alive.
There are so many patterns and colors on this quilt. African prints, shapes, frames, warm earth tones, and a brown that reminds me of the desert sand. A pretty pink for the youngest, her granddaughter. Silhouettes of women with rounded noses and full lips, not cartoonish, but real. Hairstyles from a short cut to women with coarse, curly hair pulled up high into what's known in the Black community as an Afro puff, to Bantu knots, which date back to Africa.
The woman in the center, that would represent my grandmother. And the reason that I have her with the Bantu knots and the shells around her neck is because her grandparents were enslaved and she knew them. She knew her grandparents. She grew up with her grandparents. So that, to me, is pretty, very powerful. That to have someone that's still alive that knew an enslaved person. Yeah, so that's why she looks the way, her silhouette looks the way that it looks.
Do you ever think about your work living on, being passed down for generations?
That is the goal, that all of this will live and be viewed beyond me. So that's why I put so much work into it and effort into it, because I want someone to be able to see, it's like, oh yeah, that is about X, Y, and Z, and that is about our family, or that is, and have descriptions about it and documentation and pictures and that kind of thing about all of the quilts that I make. that is the goal. I would love to have all of this one day when I have a bigger collection and have it all bound into a book so that my family would be able to see, you know, the quilts that I've made and why I made them and why I thought it was important at that time to make them.
If someone is listening to us and mm-hmm. they have never thought of a quilt as a historical document, mm-hmm. what would you want them to understand after listening to our conversation?
That sometimes as families, we orally tell stories, and through the generations, some of the details can be lost. Whereas if it's documented on fabric or if it's documented in a book, the facts are the facts. And they were facts that were given from whoever were being interviewed and told that story. And so one of the things that I love about quilting is that it freezes history and time. It's a snapshot in time.
And with each stitch, Lisa is ensuring her family story isn't lost to time.
That was Central Florida Public Media's Sharon Stone speaking with Lisa Moore, studio artist at the Art and History Museum's Maitland. Hear more about the history of Black History Month on Engage. Get it wherever you get this podcast. That's it for the wrap this week. This podcast is produced by Central Florida Public Media with editorial assistance from News Director LaToya Dennis. I'm Brendan Byrne. This is The Wrap.